This is Hallie Knipp, a graduate student with Clemson University's Special Collections and Archives. I'm here with Eleanor Hare, who was a faculty member in the Department of Computer Science. The date is July 28th, 2023.
Dr. Hare, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
Okay. So to kind of get us started, can you just tell me a little bit about your personal background? Where are you from? Where did you go to school? Things like that.
I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia. And I went to Hollins College in Roanoke, Virginia, and got a BA in chemistry. I went to work for the research laboratories for the engineering sciences at the University of Virginia, where I encountered my first computer.
Around what year was that?
That was approximately 1960, maybe 61.
Okay.
They bought their first computer, and they sent around a memo that anybody who wanted to program the computer, they were going to have 3 one-hour sessions. It was a Burroughs 205 vacuum tube computer. That means it needed a lot of air conditioning. So when I programmed it, I kept my winter coat in that room. So in the middle of July, I'd go down, put my winter coat on, and sit down at the console of the computer. It was where it began. It was one of those computers that when it stopped, you got up from your seat, you walked over with your pad, and you wrote down which lights were on and which lights were off. It was a start. However, my husband took a job at Clemson University beginning in 1964, so we moved to Clemson. And I did look into a job with the computers here. Clemson at the time, their computer was a box. It was in the basement of the math building in a big room by itself. It did not need super air conditioning, so it was not a vacuum tube. Computer. Charlie Kirkwood and Merrill Palmer were the faculty members, and their staff consisted of a graduate student and a part-time programmer, part-time secretary. And I looked into taking a job with it because they had one. I could have taken the secretary job, but I had a two-year-old, and it didn't pay enough to cover a daycare for my two-year-old. So I taught high school for a year and then became a full-time housewife. Eventually, my marriage broke up. I took some courses in the math department as an auditor, and sitting around not knowing what to do next when your marriage breaks up, I didn't know what to do. Math department offered me an assistantship to get a master's. So I did that. Met a person in the math department and married him. And after we got married, that first semester, a graduate student walked out in the middle of the semester, and they knew that I had with all the coursework and everything for the master's degree and was getting it that December, and they asked me, would I come teach your courses? And I said yes. And that was the beginning of being asked almost every semester to teach courses for the math department. I taught calculus. I taught all 4 semesters of math for elementary school teachers. And I taught computer science courses, the beginning computer science that was taught as a math course. Joe Turner was selected as chair of the computer science department when one was formed. And it took the PhDs from the math department. I was not one, but Joe Turner came by and asked me if I would teach the second year that the math, that computer science was born.
Mm-hmm.
He told me that he expected to be able to hire a PhD in computer science, so it would be a one-year appointment. And I said, yes, I would like to teach. It turned out that they never did hire that PhD. So I taught for quite a few years. And finally, it seemed that I really ought to have officially computer science courses on my resume. So, of course, I started with taking a course from Joe Turner, because it seemed if I was going to put my foot down and take a course, the department head should know whether I knew it or not. And evidently I did okay, because I had a tie for the top grade in the course. So that was the beginning of taking more courses. My husband said, why are you taking courses? And I said, it seems like I should have some courses. I'm teaching computer science. I should have some courses on my record. And he said, well, you should get a doctorate. And he finally talked me into going for a doctorate, which made me the first female PhD in the department. I mean, the first female that received a PhD from the new computer science department.
Okay.
And I really loved teaching. I loved computer science. I particularly enjoyed being a primary advisor for students. In that, I worked with Wayne Madison, who was a marvelous associate department chair. He saw that everything worked with the teaching, I enjoyed the department immensely. Jack Peck was a whiz at everything database, and Arthur Pellerin was another database person. He was wonderful. The students would tell me that in the final week when their database projects were due, Art would bring his van over and park in the parking lot so that when the system went down at 2 a.m., they would come down and rap on the window of his van, and he'd go do whatever he needed to get the system back up. It was a good department to work in. Totally enjoyed it.
Good. So before you got your PhD, it sounds like a lot of your computer science knowledge was sort of self-taught or taught on the go, as it were. Trial by fire, is that correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
As far as computer languages are concerned, I worked with ALGOL, that's ALGOL, at the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we were teaching the database courses at Clemson, that was one of my favorite courses to teach. That would be the third semester. And we went through a series of languages. I remember Ada as a language we taught, and C++ as the language we taught, and I taught C one semester. That was for the chemistry department. They wanted a course for chemists, and we did that for one semester. And let's see, C++, originally Fortran, and the Fortran was called WAT5, WATFIV, which was a compiler for Fortran. Modula 2. We eventually settled down on Java, which was a very fine language. And I think the department is still using Java as one of their main languages.
I think think you're right. I think based on talking to people, that seems correct.
Yes. Java is an important language because it is a safer language, one of the safer languages for hackers attacking memory.
Okay.
That both C and C++ are vulnerable, and the security experts are recommending Java and Python.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, and that relates to some of your research, if I understand it, related to voting systems. Is that?
Yes.
Okay, can we talk about that a little bit?
In approximately 2005, the state of South Carolina decided to buy a voting machine called the iVotronic, iVotronic. It really, nobody knew very much about it. And the League of Women Voters asked me to join a study, in fact, to lead a study that they planned to do of the voting machines. So I was elected to the state board, and I joined with several other people to find out what we could about the iVotronic voting machine. I did a demo that I took around the state to various meetings of the League of Women Voters that used an Etch-a-Sketch to demonstrate how when you voted on an iVotronic, your vote disappeared from your screen and was not recorded on paper anywhere.
Okay.
It was recorded digitally. There was a memory, in fact, three memories in the iVotronic, but there was no paper ballot. And because there was no paper ballot, it was not a good system to have. And so, along with several other people, we published some newspaper op-eds and a journal article expressing the opinion that we really needed a paper ballot and explaining why, and mentioning a couple of things that had gone wrong in the state voting because there wasn't a paper ballot. Since then, the state has selected a system by Election Systems and Software, ES&S, that does have a paper ballot. The state has also done some things like perform risk-limiting audits after an election. At least Pickens County has. I'm not sure whether that was an official adoption statewide.
Mm-hmm.
But we have made huge strides in the security of our voting. And because there's a paper ballot, and because the name is printed on the paper ballot of each selection that you made, when you pick up your ballot from the ballot marking device, it is very important to look at your ballot and be sure that it says what you intended for it to say. And then the ballots are read by a scanner and contained in a ballot box. The risk-limiting audit checks some percent of ballots randomly selected to see if there is an agreement between what the machines have been reported to say and what the physical ballots say they should say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good system. It's a doubly good system because everything is done at county level and fed up to the state level.
Okay.
That if you wanted to hack a ballot, if you wanted to decide how a ballot should be voted,
mm-hmm.
The best you could do is do one precinct in the entire state. And to get an idea of how many precincts there are in the state, there are more than 30 in Pickens County. So every precinct would have a different ballot, maybe more than one different ballot. So if you're going to hack, you've got to hack how many? Thousands of ballots?
Mm-hmm.
That would take so much cooperation of people that it would be known.
That's really interesting. So as you mentioned, the ability to hack into memory with, or that Java and Python kind of limit that. Is that related to your own research or?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't say my own research, but perhaps it would be. The Washington Post publishes a security letter every day, Monday through Friday. It's called the 202 something or other. And I read that and share it with other people. I have a good friend, Alice Flower, who has a master's degree in the computer science department. And she and I share it back and forth, and we talk about what's in it and try and stay up to date. Also, every now and then I explain something to the League of Women Voters, because there are not too many of us who have actually coded.
Right.
Women have been slow to get started in computer science. For years, there haven't been women in computer science. And as a result, among this bunch of retired women, there are not too many who have coded.
Mm-hmm.
I think the computer science department made a major step forward when they brought Juan Gilbert in with his group of researchers. He brought in women, he brought in minorities, and we in the League of Women Voters, we provided subjects for some of his studies with the photo recognition for voting and that kind of thing. And he was a major asset for the department.
Around when did he come in, do you remember?
Pardon?
Around what year did he come in? Doesn't have to be exact.
I don't know.
Okay.
I know that Florida enticed him away, and he and his group pretty much left Clemson and went to Florida.
Okay.
He had a major impact on voting technology. But nationally.
Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you about women in computing, especially in those early days. It seems like it was really a boys' club. Can you speak to that?
I think I agree with you. Pretty much when computers came into universities, they came in wherever somebody was interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no computer science department. At the University of Virginia, it went to the physics department. At Clemson, it went to the math department. One day I saw a request from the Department of Geology and Computer Science at some university. So if you look at the people who at that time were in math or physics, they were primarily men.
Mm-hmm.
We were just coming out of a time that women were really, really expected to go into nursing, teaching, or secretarial work. At the time I entered college, the University of Virginia did not admit women. They did admit women who lived in the town, but not otherwise.
Okay.
When I came to Clemson University in 1964, I am I don't think Clemson admitted women at that time, but they did shortly when they built a dorm. So you have a time that the fields that are providing the people learning computer science are primarily mathematical, and a time that women really were expected to get an MRS degree instead of a BA, mm-hmm. or along with their BA. And it was slow for women. A friend of mine, Greg Kesden, who had an office across the hall from me at Clemson, went to Carnegie Mellon to teach, and they tried very hard to recruit women. They had a program where they specialized in women. Mm-hmm. They could still only get 20% computer science students, women. Well, I think that has changed. I think it's changed because our culture has changed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I saw the math department go to about at least 50% women students.
Mm-hmm.
And computer science would be slower to come to have more women than math. For one thing, there weren't many high school computer science teachers.
Right.
Anybody who got a computer science degree could make so much more money doing anything but teaching that they did not go into teaching very frequently. I did run into two of our graduates who did go into teaching. In Greenville, the Wade Hampton High School had at some point one of our graduates teaching computer science courses. And one of our computer science majors went to Christ Church High School in Greenville to teach. And I was like, hooray. Because my experience with teaching at Clemson, when most of my students were male.
Right.
I mean, I remember a course with 70 students that I had one female.
Oh my gosh.
There is a gender difference. There is a gender difference in how you attack problems. And women and men seem to have a real difference in how they approached learning to code, learning to solve problems. That may have disappeared, but it was there when I was teaching. And it may have been because the female students who went into computer science were selecting computer science for different reasons than the males.
Okay. Like what?
Well, I think they were more problem solvers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't expect you to have all the answers, but I am interested in your opinion on this.
Sometimes I tried to talk females into, why don't you consider computer science?
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they didn't want to be computer science majors because they thought computer scientists were nerds, and they didn't want to be considered nerds.
Okay. So is this like mid-80s?
Yeah.
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 That's kind of what I've heard and read in the research that's been done on this topic. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the culture may be changing.
I would agree with that. I think it's a lot less of a social suicide to be considered nerdy now than it maybe was 20, 30 years ago, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
I was talking to Mike Westall last week.
Yeah.
And he said, and I tried to find documentation that backed this up, but it doesn't exist, that in the early days of the department, so like 78, around about, he would be teaching a class of, I don't know, 25 undergrads, and it would be like 15 men to 10 women or something comparable to that.
I'm surprised there were 10 women.
But then he said, you know, by 85, it had dropped off. Like, you in a class of 25, you might have 3 women. But then Joe Turner said that he had never seen what he called a reasonable amount of women students in those early days. So it was just interesting that they remembered that differently. How do you remember that time?
I remember, well, the entering course that I taught was the course for students who had had computer science in high school.
Okay.
I was lucky to have a female in there, and I would have 70 plus students.
Okay.
But what that spoke to was what the people coming out of high school.
Yeah, that they just didn't have that information coming in. That makes sense.
Just about the time I was retiring, I wanted to teach a course that we didn't offer. I was upset that we had such a high D, W, and F rate for our entering majors, and that would be the first course, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really high, and the dean was complaining about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I proposed, and the department allowed me to teach a one-credit course, pass-fail, for people who did not qualify to enter our first course because they were not qualified to take the first course of engineering calculus, that they had to be eligible to take that engineering calculus course. And Ken Weaver taught it with me. I got him to do it. By the way, I did this after I retired.
Okay.
But I went back as sort of a freebie. They paid me $100 a semester, and I wanted to get $10 a semester, and they said, no, we have to pay you $100 so we can deduct your parking fee. But anyway, this course, the requirements of the course, it was graded on attendance, write a short paper based on your reading on voting, and working through a book called Carl the Robot. That's K-A-R-E-L. And in Carl the Robot, which is this little tiny book, it paperback, you go through all the basic structures of beginning computer science, such as while loops and if then else, and repetition. It even covers recursion without ever using the word recursion. And it's really a test of whether or not the student wants to do computer science.
Okay.
And the result of it was, there was this very bright girl who was a Chinese major, and she changed her major to computer science and even got a master's. That was one of the really bright things. But the thing that I intended was that those students who really weren't going to take to coding computer science never take 101 and never get an F from 101 because this wasn't their thing. And that's what it worked out for.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me, because my own experience with coding is a lot of what that book sounds like it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see if you don't get those basic concepts, you're not going to be able to build on them in any any way. So was that a successful program? I mean, is it something that continued?
No, it did not continue. And, there was nobody else who was interested. Ken Weaver kept it up on a very limited basis, that he took a student here and there, mm-hmm. who would, he'd work with in his office, and they would get credit for the one credit course. I didn't sell it well enough, I'm afraid.
Well, it reminds me of what they do now for the master's program, is the those bridge courses that you can take in the summer.
Yeah.
If you don't have an undergrad in computer science, you can kind of take a intensive in the summer before you start the master's program.
Oh.
At least that's how I understand it. I've just done, like, very minimal research about that. But what it sounds like is kind of the same idea, just on a broader scale for master's students.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that idea is still around in a way that is just a little bit different.
Well, I'm happy. when I did it, my main purpose was to avoid students getting into a four-credit course and having to drop it or get an F. And I thought that it was reasonable to try and avoid that.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the things I really enjoyed doing for the department was as their primary advisor. And I did that until I retired. It was really interesting to be an advisor. With Wayne Madison's help, we put together the first paper planning program for students.
Okay.
So they could, this was a two sides of one sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. And they would fill out the courses they'd had and the courses they were going to take. And by the end of their sophomore year, they should be able to plan through the senior year what they were going to take when. And they would have all prerequisites. It was a great planning tool. And Wayne eventually had a graduate student use Python to put it on the system so that the students could save their work.
Mm-hmm.
And so a student would walk in and he would, or she, would pull up the system and show me, okay, here's what I've taken, here's what I've planned ahead, and you could pick out any potential problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you could also do things like avoiding a student having five computer courses in the same semester, which you would really like to avoid.
I'd imagine.
I had one student who managed it and made A's in all of them.
Imagine they were an outlier.
Definite outlier. He graduated at the end of that semester. But
not the way I would want to spend my last semester.
Yeah.